Totness Talks. Totness Talks.
One of the greatest bonuses of living in Totnes, the number one bonus, is the River Dart. We're lucky enough to live in a town that strides over the River Dart, both sides of the River Dart, at the point where the streams of the Moors meet the waters of the tidal waters of the estuary. It's a beautiful setting, and any time you walk along the Dart, say along Long Marsh or on Sharpham, you see often a considerable number of boats, maybe more boats than the Dart has ever seen in its history. And these boats are invariably all belonging to the Totness and Dart Rowing Club. So I've come to talk to Mark Nash, who is the chair of the committee of the Rowing Club, to tell me and our listeners a bit more about the Rowing Club, its past, its present, and perhaps its future. So just very briefly, because I don't want to spend time on the past, but how old is the club? How long has it been going for?
There are originally two clubs, Dart Rowing Club and Totness Rowing Club. And they started in, we think, the late 1860s, or definitely by 1870.
Yeah.
And they were divided by, one was for professionals and one was for labourers. And they were on the other side of the river from where we are now.
Yeah.
And they held events and muddled through for 30 or 40 years. And somewhere between 1904 and 1920, the two of them merged. And that's where it became Dart Totness Rowing Club. And since then, we've been here or hereabouts.
About 1920s.
So. 1920, I think the merger had to happen by then. It happened sometime around the First World War, either slightly before or after.
So its present form's just over 100 years old?
Yeah.
Did you have celebrations at centenary?
No, we didn't. Oh. I wasn't here then, so when we got to 150, that would have been 2020, so that was pandemic time.
Oh, yes.
So,
how many members have you got now?
At the moment we've got 215 odd. Just before the pandemic we had about 240, so membership's slightly down from where it was, but most of them, we have 130 adults, maybe 60 juniors, and that's our mix.
Whenever I come down here and see the I can't call them oarsmen anymore. So, what do we call them? Rowers.
Rowers.
Rowers. I mean, when I rowed back in the Dark Ages, I don't think there were any female rowers at all.
Oh.
But I've seen photographs down there, taken a long time ago, of rowers on the Dart that were female.
Yes, there was female rowing quite early on. So, yes. In some of the archives in the early 1900s, there were races for women.
How's that made up in terms of crews? What sort of crew do you have?
So we have quite a few squads. So we have a large contingent of what we call masters rowing, which is technically a master is someone over 28, but we have a lot of people who are in their 50s, 60s and 70s who row. So that's our master squad, and they'll compete at regattas both locally and nationally and internationally. They go to the European and World Masters.
Yeah.
And so I myself rowed at the British Masters Championship last year. So that was held up in Nottingham.
In Nottingham, right.
So we have quite a big masters contingent, and then we have what we call the senior squad. So those are people under 28 and over 18. So we have a men and women's senior squad.
Yeah.
So they'll train in eights and fours and other boats.
Uh-huh.
And they'll be looking to compete at quite a high level. So maybe go to Henley or Women's Henley or compete in London,
yeah.
And obviously locally as well. And then below that we have the junior squads. So we have junior girls and boys. We have the younger ones are in a coach separately to the ones that are between 16 and 18. So as they progress, we keep them in their age groups. And they'll race all over the southwest in the Wira Regattas, West of England Amateur Rowing Association. So we go to all sorts of places with them, Biddeford and Plymouth and Exeter. And those kind of places. And we also take them to national events. So we're going soon to Eton Dorney to the what's called the Oresport Junior Sculling event, which is a big national event. And last month we took a crew to the school's Head of the River, which was over the boat race course from Chiswick to Putney.
Right.
So there would have been 350 schools competing in
that's,
that.
That's tremendous experience. Eton Dorney, wasn't that where the Olympics was, right? Head of the River on the Thames is where the Oxford-Cambridge race. Mm-hmm. That's major rowing on that river.
Yeah, we had... So there are four heads of the rivers. There's the women's head of the river, the men's head of the river, the master's head of the river, and the school's head of the river.
Mm-hmm.
All of them have at least 350 boats in.
Gosh,
and we competed in all four this year. So,
wow.
Our top crews, the women came 124th out of 350-something. So, you know, it's fairly, it's good level of competition.
Yes.
It's difficult for us. We don't have the catchment area and accessibility of the London clubs.
No.
So we're competing kind of with people that have better chance than us.
Yes.
But we acquit ourselves well.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it. That is tremendous. It involves a lot of travelling there.
That is the big problem for us. It's just, it's not necessarily the time, it's the expense. So we have to tow our boats. So that's, you know, a couple of £100 in fuel to get to London and back. And then we've got to, we can't get there in time for the 9 o'clock start by leaving here at 4 a.m. So we have to stay overnight. So we have accommodation costs and transport costs. And it's difficult for people. You know, it's an expensive sport to take part in that respect.
How many regattas, I mean, you've just run through quite a few. How many regattas is that in total that you travel out to over the course of a year?
There are regattas going on all year round. So there is a summer season of shorter races.
Uh-huh.
They're the traditional sort of 1,000 metres or 2,000 metres. You'll see boats side by side, and we have a regatta here in early July, that format of racing. And then during the winter, they have what's called head racing, which is longer distance. So that'll be 5 or 8 kilometres.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a 20-minute or a 25-minute race. And they're done processionally on the stopwatch.
Yes.
So side-by-side racing in the summer and stopwatch processional racing in the winter.
Right. How do you fund all this? Is this membership fees?
So I coach the junior women. So when we go away, they have to pay individually for a share of the costs.
Mm-hmm.
We were lucky this year, so we went to the Heads of the River in London and 36 rowers went up from here. So obviously we can take all the boats on one trailer and that shares the cost.
Mm-hmm.
But still people have to pay to stay somewhere. And
yes.
Money is an issue with rowing, it always is.
Yes.
It's an expensive sport to put on in terms of premises and equipment.
Yes.
When you see an 8 on the water, to buy a new one of those is probably a minimum £35,000 or £50,000 to buy an 8.
Yeah.
And the 4s are maybe £20,000,
£25,000.
Yes. And they don't last forever, and technology moves on. So if you want to compete against the best, you have to renew your fleet all the time. So that's a big expense for us.
When you say technology moves on, now I remember shifting from what they called clinker boat to a shell.
Yeah.
Big difference. But how? What other technology changes have you seen? The oar has changed.
Yep, the oars have all changed. So I started rowing in the 80s with wooden oars.
Yes.
And then along came composites, and then they went to carbon fibre oars. So a pair of oars is probably £400 now, the latest carbon fibre oars, just for two. The boats, so they went from clinkers to smooth-shelled wooden boats. And then they went to honeycomb construction, where you have two layers of kind of fiberglass with a honeycomb in between that's quite light and strong. And then the boats now are carbon fiber, or carbon fiber mixed with the honeycomb construction, depends on the cost.
What's the effect of that? Is that to make the boats lighter, stronger, more flexible?
Less flexible. They're stiffer, they're lighter.
Yes.
And that all gives boat speed. So the power that you're putting through the oar transmits to the water without any flex.
Right.
So you're getting everything out of what you're putting in, or more of it.
What age do people start rowing? Can people start rowing?
Okay, at most schools, you'll start rowing at 14.
14, yeah.
You need to make sure that the that your back is strong enough to take the activity. And for children of younger than that, they can row, but we have to make sure they row with two oars, which is called sculling, so that they remain balanced and straight. So you don't really progress to rowing with a single oar, we call sweep rowing, until you're at least 15.
And if you're rowing, say you choose to row on stroke side, the right-hand side, or the bow side, or the left-hand side, do you change about just to do that? Do they change from rowing on one side to the other side just to keep the development of their muscles and spine
balanced? See our job here as coaches to equip them to do any role in a rowing boat of any size. So we teach them how to row on their own in a single scull. We teach them to row on both sides. We teach them to stroke the boat. We teach them to steer the boat so that if they go on to university, they can drop into the club and literally do anything that's asked of them.
Yeah.
That's my goal for the juniors.
Right. The other thing that I find curious walking along the river is the different speeds of the river. Sometimes it's flowing fast in one direction, fast in another. Sometimes it's flowing in one direction, the wind's blowing in another. It must be quite difficult to row on this river, and plus flotsam and jetsam.
In terms of conditions, yes, it's tidal, and there's quite a big difference between high tide and low tide.
Yeah.
Sometimes low tide can be too low for us. We can't actually boat because there's not enough water. So that happens now and again. It's not a common occurrence. In terms of the speed of the flow, I've rowed in London on the Thames, and that's much faster. So the speed of flow of the tide isn't a problem here.
All right.
What we do get a problem with is when the tide is going one way and the wind is going the other way. Wind against tide makes it quite choppy, and that can make it difficult. But that's a rare occurrence again. We're sheltered by the valley, so a lot of the time we have ideal conditions for rowing here.
Yeah. Well, that's what about the tree trunks I occasionally see?
Yes, we get some damage from those now and again because they sit slightly submerged. Yeah. So it's really hard for you to see them if you're going backwards, which we are, or else the coxswain is sat behind a very large person just in front of them and can only see peripherally. So yes, we do have log strikes now and again. There has been quite a lot. So when it rains very heavily, we'll get a lot of stuff come down from further upriver. And we get occasional damage. Maybe once every 2 months, a boat will hit it and damage it slightly. But we can't clean the river, and we just have to work around it.
Yeah. And that's an expensive collision if it damages a boat.
Yeah, we're very lucky. We have a boatman here who does a lot of our work in-house on the boats.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if they're damaged, you have to send them away to the manufacturer, which is normally either in Nottingham or London.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a £200 journey to trailer it there and back, and then you've got to pay for the repair. So we're very lucky that our boatman does a lot of our maintenance for us and is skilled enough to repair these. They're quite fine and quite brittle hulls, so it's a skillful job.
When you're coaching, I see coaches cycle along what you might call the towpath here, along Long Marsh. What happens if you want to coach further down the river? Do you put a coach in the coxswain's position, or do you have launches to go?
There are lots of options open to us. So we have two coaching launches.
Right.
And we'll take them out alongside the boats and go down to Sharpham or Duncannon down there. The coach can be the cox in the boat, so they can actually see what's going on up close. And quite often I will jump in the boat and be one of the crew in the boat, so you can lead the coaching from inside the boat. But most of the time, my coaching's done from the launch on the river.
Right. That's probably the easiest.
It's the most effective.
Yeah,
because you're up close, and we're looking to make small changes to how people are moving in the boat, and so you need to be right alongside them, reminding them of the change that you want to see, and making sure that they don't slip back into what they were doing beforehand. So it's the eternal coach's frustration, is you tell someone to change something and 3 or 5 strokes later they go back to what they were doing before.
Yeah.
So the coaching process is really quite up alongside with lots of reminders and drills and practices.
Yeah. We're sitting talking here in, I suppose you'd call this a gym, but you've just got 2 kinds of machines in here. You've got the rowing machines and bicycles. Mm. How many rowing machines have you got there?
Just 20, I think. 20,
20?
I guess.
Do you ever have them all going at once?
Yes. In the winter, this room is full.
Really full.
Most evenings.
But it's great to have that option, isn't it? Sit on a rowing machine overlooking the river.
Yeah.
Imagining that you're on.
Lots of rowing clubs have their ergo rooms in a dark basement, and it's a real mental challenge to find the motivation to keep going when you can't see the river or see the daylight.
It's a wonderful option. Now, I have the impression, the feeling that rowing is possibly the best sport for all over physical fitness. You're using your legs, mm-hmm. your arms, your back, core strength. And what is most telling, if you're in a boat, you can't slack. Can you think of a better exercise than
that? I can't. My background, I was at school and played football, and my knees hurt and I didn't like football, and it was muddy and awful. And the chance to row is a revelation, because there's no impact, you're not going to get hit by anything. There's no stress on your joints, you're not twisting or turning your knees or ankles and all that kind of thing. So that's why it attracts so many older rowers. The Masters contingent's very large here, because it is a wonderful thing for you to do at all ages.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's both aerobic and anaerobic, so we have the long races and the short sprint races. It's incredibly varied, and physiologically, it's not damaging, and it's very rewarding in terms of general fitness.
Have there been any developments that you're aware of, or changes that you're aware of in training methods over the years?
Absolutely. So we're led by the Olympic program, and what happens at the top level of the sport filters down through British rowing.
Right.
So the coaches, we are trained in British rowing methods, and we have the ability to update our skills and our knowledge. We consult with British rowing coaches, and they tell us what's new coming down the pipeline. So very much maybe 25 years ago, training consisted of long endurance pieces of rowing. You'd go out and row for an hour, you know, one way and the next, and keep going, and that built stamina. But nowadays we've realized that training techniques need to be more tailored and more specific. So what they use is an 80-20 rule a lot of the time. So 80% of our training is done at a fairly low heart rate. So it's about 70% of your maximum heart rate. And we train to that heart rate for 80% of the time. And the other 20% of the time is done what we call interval training. So very high intensity training with short breaks in between it for your body to recover, and then you go again. So that mix of training provides the aerobic capability to keep going, and it also provides the anaerobic capability to sprint either at the beginning or end of the piece.
Yes.
And those two together give you the shortest time A to B. You know, when you go to races and there are 400 boats in it, all of whom are training maybe 7-8 times or more a week, you know, the methods of training have become optimized. And so in order to turn up at a regatta and be competitive, you have to join in with the latest techniques. And if you don't, then it's sport. You come last.
Do you think that the interest in rowing has grown post-Redgrave era and that sort of what?
Yeah, I was at school with Andy Holmes, who rowed in a pair with Steve Redgrave and won his first gold medal in Seoul in the late 80s.
Yeah.
That really was a time when rowing was changing from a kind of elite public school sort of sport, yes, to one where more ordinary working class people began to participate. And it came, it was a time when many more people came into rowing and more clubs were formed. Mm-hmm. And it was the success that that fed with the influx of people and the training methods that they adopted at British Rowing and the Olympic group all came together and produced a period of success for Olympic rowing,
yes,
that was unprecedented. And we brought in a coach from Germany, and we were top of the world. And that brought a huge amount of interest to rowing. People wanted to know, you know, how can I get into rowing? And they were aware of it as a sport option for their, yes, their children. And, yeah, a lot of growth.
Still doing pretty well, I think.
Yeah, it's the ebb and flow. If you're successful, and like British Rowing was, yeah, then what happens is other countries copy what you're doing.
Yes.
And they poach your coaching staff. Steve Regrave went to work in China with the Chinese.
Oh, right.
And, you know, others left and went to other countries. And then the game reinvents itself. You then have to think, right, what do we do next to become better than we were?
Yes.
And so the training methods have evolved.
Yeah. I think there's a statue to Steve Redgrave in Marlow.
Probably.
Yeah. I think I've seen it. My memory serves me well.
I try not to look at it because every time I row against him, I lose.
So. Well, that's nothing to be ashamed of, is it? Have you got future plans for developing the club in any way?
Well, we're getting to the point where the number of active members is taking us to a point where we're kind of full up in, right, terms of ability to get the boats on the water and just the size of the facilities. So we have access, the council leases us a space,
yeah,
next to our clubhouse where we have boat storage. But yes, we'd like to have more boat storage, but obviously we're at a point where we need to renegotiate the lease with the council, and then that comes down to money. And so a perennial problem for a club like ours, we're not a rich club, and we're participating in what is an expensive sport. So it's a constant balancing act between being able to afford to compete, and that's where we have to raise money. It's difficult raising money at the moment. The last 3 or 4 years have made fundraising very difficult for sports clubs. So we try our best. We have most rowing clubs make their money from holding regattas. So we have a regatta in July, 5th and 6th of July this year. It's a two-day regatta. So other competitors, they pay to enter your race. And obviously we keep part of that as our income. And then we have various winter races where other clubs come.
Mm-hmm.
So we spend money going to their regattas and they spend money coming to ours, and that's what makes the world of rowing go round.
Yeah, so far so good.
We always need more money. Yeah. We can always spend more money. It's expensive equipment, and we have lots of people that deserve to row in better boats than we have. And so it's a constant battle to keep up with the technology. And
so what would you need to do in order to be able to accommodate more rowers?
More boats, a bit more space. We don't, you know, this building was built when the club wasn't so big, so it's a difficult problem. We're discussing in committee at the moment the what is our sustainable membership?
Yes.
Who can we service properly? We don't want to have too many people, and then they don't get the coaching and the support and the equipment that they deserve. So we're debating at the moment what our future plans will be for that. But
Okay.
Money is always the limiting factor.
Yes, that's the same old story, unfortunately, but even so, it feels to me such a worthwhile cause. So, you know, I would say thank you to you, Mark, for talking to us, and thank you to your committee, keeping things going. Thank you for keeping Totnes healthy, especially young people. I think somehow or other you can always tell a rower because they walk differently.
Yes, good posture.
Yes, good posture.
And so we'd invite anyone. We have a website, darktotnes.co.uk, so find us on the website. If you want to join and come down and try it, then that's possible. We do learn to row sessions that last maybe 6 to 8 weeks, and you can have a go at it, see it through to a competency level, and then decide if you want to go further with it. And as I say, we have people of all age groups. don't sit at home and think, oh, I'm 50 years old, I can't do that, because lots of us are, so please come down.
That was Totness Talks with Paul Wesley, speaking with Mark Nash of the Totness Rowing Club. This is a Totness Pulse production. Thank you for listening.